This is Cole Zimmerman, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services in Warren, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Good afternoon. Farm news here on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Jamie Dickerman, along with Chloe Wan and Toby Nace this afternoon as we start with Harvest Hotline, and it's brought to you by U.S. Custom Harvesters Incorporated, Ag Country Farm Credit Services, Amity Technology, and the North Dakota Mill. Wheat harvest underway near Rugby, North Dakota. Area farmer Steve Friedel says early yields have been good, but the region needs rain.
So we started wheat harvest a few days ago, and it's going good. Wheat yields are respectable, and things are going good. There's no rain in the forecast, so that's a good harvest event, but yet we could definitely use some rain.
Riedel says good soil moisture this spring has helped crops handle this long dry stretch. However, soybeans are starting to show some stress.
Well, we had really good moisture conditions this spring. I think we had good subsoil moisture, and that's what's helping the crops hang in there as long as they had. I think July 4th timeframe is probably the last measurable precip we've had. You know, we've had some showers, 10, 20 hundredths. But that doesn't go very far. So we've had a stretch here where we've been without.
Riedel says disease and insect pressure has been low, and some fungicide applications were skipped because of the dry weather.
As harvest gets closer, crop conditions remain mixed across the Dakotas. Troy Connect farms in northern Brown County, South Dakota, and says his area has been benefited from timely rains this growing season, while areas farther south and west have been much drier.
Really, very little to no small grain in our area, but I would say right now we're pretty optimistic on corn in our immediate area in northern Brown County where I'm at. Soybeans look great. We've had some timely rains. We could probably use one more, but we haven't really suffered all year in my area. Now, if you go south to the ethanol plant down by Redfield and then south and west of there, I think it's much like some areas in North Dakota where they're really dry. So I think just like the Pro Farmer Tour is kind of indicating, I just don't know that the crop is there like USDA thought it was.
Potato variety research was a focus at this week's field day in Hoople, North Dakota. Lone Star Varieties owner and CEO Paige Parrish works with potato trials across the country, including three locations in North Dakota.
Some of them are just overall variety research plots, and then some of them are like mini tuber optimization and other like seed study type stuff where like we try test whole versus cut superized, that kind of stuff as well. And then some are just based on what growers have asked us to trial. So it just kind of depends on like growers will call and say they have an issue or a question about something, and then we'll trial it from there.
Much of that research is driven by the questions and challenges growers are seeing on their farms.
Place we're seeing a lot of different weather patterns. Some are above average as far as rainfall. Some are below average. Actually, here, it's for how dry it's been, it's doing okay. All the crops are doing, I'd say, fairly all right, especially if they keep getting some shots of rain, it'll be good. Our varieties have done great, so we have a few here in the valley specifically. We have Page and Snowcap, which are both chippers, and then we have Stella Gold, which is a yellow, and that's done really well, and as well as Dakota Russet, which is like a processing russet, and they've all done really well. We've done a lot of field checks. The last 3 days we've been doing digs, and they've been reasonably drought tolerant. They still have like a very lively upright vine.
In Central Walsh County, North Dakota, Joe Miller reports that the wheat harvest went well and his sunflower crop is right on schedule.
Yeah, we didn't plant too much wheat this year. I had 70 acres. The wheat ran okay. It was on sandier ground, so I wasn't expecting much, but I think some of it did fairly well, about 65 bushels. Some of it was about 50 bushels. Yeah, wheat was about where I would expect it to be. We planted that wheat at the end of April, so I let it dry down naturally. I didn't kill it or anything, so that took a little while longer, but it came off about a week ago. And sunflowers, I expect to probably be harvesting them middle to end of September.
Looking at the current corn and sunflower crop, Miller says that the drought has had an effect on his crops.
Well, they definitely took a hit in the dry period. Could have used another rain. We've been pretty dry here. But they're holding on. I was checking some corn the other day, and, you know, I'm going to need all of September and probably a little more rain before that's going to finish well. But it's definitely making a cob and filling to the top still. So I think we're looking at a decent crop. Nothing breaking any records, but okay. And the sunflowers, they've held on fairly well, but I'm certain we're not going to have any kind of bumper crop there either. It's going to produce something. Hopefully they can finish out and we have a decent oil content at least.
Dry weather is taking a toll on crops in the Southern River Valley. Moorhead area farmer James Nelson says early sugar beet harvest is showing good sugar, but fewer tons.
They were in a moderate drought, I guess, and beets are... They're high in sugar, but they're low on tons. We could use a pretty good shot of rain, but it's getting pretty late in the fall. It's going pretty good. So harvest conditions it is nice to be dry once in a while, but they need a little moisture and grow a little bit. And we finished wheat around this area. I know they're combining Grand Forks and North some still, but it's coming along.
Wheat harvest is wrapping up around Moorhead. Nelson says yields vary a lot based on where rain fell.
It's south just a little tiny bit, and where they haven't had much rain this year, and it's 15, 20 bushel, pretty awful. And then, highs that maybe caught a couple rains at the right time, you know, that's 70, 80 bushel, so anywhere in between. And, I've heard a lot of 40s and 50s, and that's it's below the average and below some on insurance, but we were surprised. You know, we were about in the 60s, but we got in early. But that 100 degrees during flowering and pollination, that's a tough one on things.
That was Harvest Hotline, and it was sponsored by U.S. Custom Harvesters Incorporated, Ag Country Farm Credit Services, Amity Technology, and the North Dakota Mill. You are listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome back to Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. Cattle futures are under renewed pressure as the market reacts to the possibility of more imported beef entering the United States. Martinson Ag Risk Management President Randy Martinson says increasing supply is one way to bring retail beef prices down.
Really, the only way you can decrease price is increase supply. The only way you can increase supply is increase imports. And I thought we would have maybe learned maybe from the Argentina fiasco that we shouldn't be importing a lot of beef at this point. You know, let the market take care of the problem itself, which it would. If the price gets too high, the consumer will back away.
The news added another layer of uncertainty to a cattle market that has already seen significant volatility.
This really sent shockwaves again through the system and cattle trading sharply lower because of it. And we're on a day, too, where we're looking at a cattle on feed report coming out this afternoon that is expected to be friendly. So, you know, we're also now starting to maybe push back the idea of the Arizona port opening up because of screwworm being found over in or close to that region. So there's a lot of uncertainty right now in the cattle markets, so having this news come in didn't really help us.
National Cattlemen's Beef Association pushing back on President Trump's comments about increasing beef imports. NCBEA CEO Colin Woodall says bringing more foreign beef into the United States could hurt cattle producers at a critical time. NCBEA says strong cattle prices and beef demand have been giving producers an incentive to rebuild the herd. Woodall says additional imports and other government market intervention could slow that process. He says increasing short-term beef supplies could come at the expense of long-term stability in the U.S. cattle industry.
New World screwworm has been confirmed in the state of Sorona in northern Mexico. This 5-year-old cow in Sorona's first confirmed case. It takes on great significance because this state is on the border with Douglas, Arizona. USDA said it remains committed to reopening the border at this Arizona crossing on Monday as scheduled.
The United States is preparing another major increase in economic pressure on Iran. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says new sanctions will work alongside the U.S.-led blockade.
We have a combination. It is a 1-2 punch. We have the blockade, and we are going to have the toughest sanctions in history. And I will tell you, this will work. It worked in Venezuela once we put up the blockade. It is working in Cuba right now, and it is going to work in Iran, and we are going to collapse this regime.
Details of the new sanctions have not been released. Benson says the goal is maximum economic pressure.
If we are doing the maximum economic pressure, then that means that likely there will not be a large-scale kinetic restart. But I would emphasize that is for now. And look, we do have control of the strait.
The sanctions are expected to add pressure on Iran's oil, shipping, and financial networks. Any disruption to Iranian oil or shipping throughout the Strait of Hormuz could also influence global crude oil and commodity markets.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins says USDA remains focused on improving the farm economy after several years of higher costs and weaker trade. Rollins spoke outside the White House yesterday.
You know, when we walked in the door a year and a half ago, the farm economy had seen the greatest spiral down by almost $90 billion in one year, which was 2023. We saw the average cost of inputs had increased close to 40%, some even bigger, interest rates 73%, labor, et cetera. We also saw no new trade deals in 4 years. We had lost so much of our world market share for our farmers. And I say all that because I think it's important to level set the work that is ahead to make sure that we are protecting our farmers and ranchers. I mean, you all have heard me say this a lot. Without farm security, there is no national security.
Rollins says agriculture is at the center of the ongoing negotiations with Canada.
You know, the president, and I believe this to be true, I don't know, at least in my lifetime, that there has ever been a White House, a president, an Oval Office that has had more discussions about agriculture and farmers and ranchers. The president has not been shy about his frustration with Canada and especially with dairy and what Canada's rules have done to our incredible dairy producers in America. Wisconsin is the number one dairy state in the country, but Wisconsin at one point had, you know, I think something like 30 or 35,000 dairies. They're now down to almost 5,000. I mean, it is a devastating response for a lot of bad policy through a lot of years.
This is the Red River Farm Network. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. On Fridays, we get to find out what's on the cover of this week's Ag Week. We are joined by Ag Week reporter Noah Fish. Noah, let's take a look at what's on the cover this week.
We take a look at the ag labor shortage and ways it can be solved. I talked to Minnesota ag leaders and the farm manager of Featherstone Farm in Rushford about H-2A and the pressure building behind the Securing Agriculture's Workforce Act, which would strip H-2A's seasonality requirement and open the program to dairy, pork, and other year-round operations. If enacted, it would be the first statutory change to H-2A in 40 years. Find out more about the bill's status and how Featherstone relies on its current H-2A workforce that travels from Mexico each year in this week's Ag Week magazine or at agweek.com.
Thanks, Noah. We'll look forward to reading it in this week's Ag Week. Minnesota lawmakers asking President Trump to approve federal disaster aid for parts of southeast Minnesota hit by severe storms and flooding. Congressman Brad Finstead and Senators Amy Klobuchar and Tina Smith sent a letter supporting the state's request for a major disaster declaration. Federal and state assessments found the damage meets the threshold for assistance. Minnesota's request covers Fillmore, Houston, and Maurer counties for storms that happened July 2nd through July 8th. Checking markets here just ahead of the close. We're looking at Minneapolis wheat September down 3.75, 6.97. We have December Chicago down 1.5 at 6.98 1/4. Kansas City September down 8, 7.54. Sep corn is up 3.75 now at 4.82 1/2. The Dease corn is up 3.75, 5.07 1/4. September soybeans are up 1.25 at 12.22. November unchanged, 1236.5. Looking at the cattle markets now, we are definitely off the lows, but still in negative territory for the live cattle. October down 42 cents, 217.57. Feeder September down 72 cents, 328.20. And the October lean hogs are up 65 cents right now, 80.87. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend. This is the Red River Farm Network.